Hi, y'all, and welcome to the Streetcast, 34th Street Magazine's podcast. I'm Emily. I'm here with Walden.
Howdy.
And Ariel.
Hello.
I'm the editor-in-chief. Walden is our print managing editor, and Ariel is our assignments editor. Sadly, our fourth member of Street's executive board, affectionately dubbed Strigzak, could not be here today. She is in the process of traveling back to Philly, but that is Eva, our digital managing editor. The launch of this podcast is meant to be a complement to our totally revamped print magazine, which will now come out once a month on glossy paper. This month, our theme is party culture at Penn, and our feature story is titled Working Hard, Partying Sober. It was co-written by Meg Gladieu and Walden Green, and today, Walden will be giving us a reading. Walden, do you want to kick us off?
Let's do it.
Working Hard, Partying Sober. Penn is known for its drug-fueled parties and work hard, play harder culture. But what happens when you're sober? By Walden Green and Meg Gladieu. It's what you'd expect from the university named Playboy's top party school in 2014. A makeshift rig of colored lights, sugary sweet, barely tastes like alcohol jungle juice pouring from a Gatorade cooler. A song blaring from buzzy speakers with the bass cranked all the way up. Probably No Hands by Waka Flocka Flame, Mr. Brightside, or that remix of Heads Will Roll. A booze-fueled, nearly wasted mass of bodies jumping in unison, letting go of their inhibitions to the tune of a Friday night frat party. Jake Fetterman is right there in the mix, but he hasn't had a thing to drink. I personally don't need to have alcohol in me in order to have fun. Partying alone is enough, says Jake. Though he knew drinking was a large part of fraternity culture, it was never something that appealed to him. He joined his frat to make friends and meet people from backgrounds other than his, even if he knew that had come with a heavy culture of drinking. He's never had a drip of alcohol, and he never intends to. With the rise of trends like sober TikTok, mocktail bars, and dry raves, it's clear young people are steering away from the idealization of alcohol. It feels increasingly common to come across students who've made a conscious decision not to drink, smoke, or do drugs. Even for adults in their 30s and beyond, more casual embraces of sobriety are becoming commonplace, to the point that one could even call it fashionable to be sober. Still, being sober in college, particularly as someone who regularly goes to parties, comes with challenges. At Penn, partying feels so intertwined with drinking and doing drugs that they're often inseparable from one another. It begs the question, what's the point of going out if you're not getting a little tipsy? But plenty of Penn's sober brothers and sisters are out there in the thick of it. They're proof that it doesn't take intoxication to be social at the Social Ivy. Jake fits the picture of your average frat guy. He's tall, laid back, athletic, a New York transplant who fits naturally into the social culture of Penn. So when he walked into parties at New Student Orientation last August, refusing every beer and red solo cup offered to him by upperclassmen, people were taken aback. "But I never felt pressured to drink," says Jake. Coming into Penn, Jake knew he'd be surrounded by alcohol, but his friends and even random partygoers were understanding of his choice to be sober. "If you make it through NSO, that's the hardest part," he says. By September, Jake felt that he'd mastered the art of partying sans booze, and he loved it, so much so that he started dirty rushing frats to fully integrate into the Penn Greek life scene. Even though he hit it off with most of the brothers he met, almost no frats gave Jake a bid, even one whose living room he cleaned the morning after a party. "At a certain point, I think they just dropped me because I wasn't drinking with everyone else," he says. Only one frat invited Jake to pledge, and they were accommodating of his sobriety throughout the process. When they gave him his bid, he was greeted by one of the brothers at his door in the quad. He was like, "We usually greet new brothers with a beer, but since you don't drink, I brought you this," says Jake, and then the brother handed him a can of Coke. "It made me feel welcome for who I was," he adds. Like Jake, Lauren Schneider rarely felt out of place in her social circles, although that might have been because most of the time people would forget, even people I was friends with for years would forget, that I didn't drink. It's an easy mistake to make. During her freshman year, Lauren had a more packed social calendar than most of her drinking peers. "Freshman year, I went out as often as I could. That was my priority," she explains. "I'd probably go out like 3-4 times a week. There were times when I'd be like Quater on Tuesday, Sink or Swim Wednesday, sorority stuff Thursday, Friday, Saturday." And she's never been drunk or buzzed, although she's had a drink and done a round of green tea shots with friends before. Then again, not drinking or smoking probably helped Lauren, a Sigma Delta Tau sister, from getting totally burnt out. She could go to bed at 2 a.m. and wake up at 9, tired but hangover-free. And when out with her friends, quote, "I could go longer than any of them. When I was on the dance floor, I was out," she says. For Lauren, being sober wasn't a weighty choice. Neither of her parents drank, she never went out in high school, and she just doesn't see the appeal of losing control of her mental or physical faculties. But none of this detracted from Lauren's boundless energy. "I just love to dance and talk to people," she says. But not everybody is like Jake and Lauren, especially when it comes to how immersed they are in their respective scenes. "I don't think I met more than one other person that went out like I did and was sober," Lauren says. Jake feels the same way, that he, quote, "might be the only sober attendee at a party." And that's awkward, but it's still fun. Of course, there's a reason most people drink at parties. "Frat parties aren't all that fun if you're sober," says Cheryl Chang. When Cheryl first came to Penn, she had every intention of diving into things headfirst. She'd always romanticized the college parties she'd seen on TV, so it made sense to join a sorority, Zeta Tau Alpha, and drink casually with friends, even if pandemic restrictions meant she wasn't going to frat parties her first year. But one bad experience led her to swear off alcohol entirely. "My vomit was pink. Neon bright ass pink," says Cheryl. It started as a night binge drinking with her then sorority sisters. What could go wrong with letting loose a little? A few too many shots and snacking on Flamin' Hot Cheetos was a recipe for severe nausea that ended in a Barbie-colored hue. And ever since, Cheryl has lost her taste for alcohol. The following fall, Cheryl went to frat parties with her friends but didn't drink, and soon found that they didn't quite live up to the hype. "It was just a lot of sweaty bodies touching yours in a crowded room," she says. While the people around her could get into the music and feel relaxed after a few drinks, Cheryl, completely sober, couldn't stop thinking about strangers' sweat staining her top or people stepping on her toes. By the end of her sophomore fall, Cheryl had sworn off pen parties and dropped out of her sorority, now opting for nights in with a smaller group of friends. "If you gave me a plethora of options to do for fun, going to a frat party would not be at the top of my list," says Anthony Hu. "As someone who chooses not to drink, the sticky, structurally questionable basements of frat houses aren't where he wants to spend his weekends." Anthony initially opted into the time-honored rituals of one's first year at college, roving around in packs from frat party to frat party, meeting fellow first years who'd forget his face in the morning, and going to parties along the Schuylkill where, quote, "there wasn't much alcohol, but people were acting drunk anyway." But Anthony also took a lot of passes. When he found that bailing on going out wasn't hurting his social life, it took away the pressure to party when it wasn't on his own terms. Though he still hangs out with people who drink socially, Anthony gravitates more toward close-knit house gatherings. At a house party, you basically know everyone. Or if you don't know everyone, you know someone who knows someone, says Anthony. It's more casual, there are more familiar faces, and there's more control. And sometimes, it does get out of control. "There's no boundaries," says Adrian Alateri. Though he's tried alcohol, he doesn't like it, doesn't feel like he needs it to have fun, and has chosen to stay sober. Meanwhile, his roommates drink on weeknights like it's part of their daily routine. "It's a way to uncouple themselves from Penn, which academically is so competitive and almost cutthroat," he says. While he understands the urge to step away from Penn's stressful environment, Adrian has seen some of the closest people in his life become nearly dependent on getting drunk or high to relax. "It seems a little excessive," he says. Lots of Penn students will admit themselves that drinking heavily on weekends is a coping mechanism used to decompress from a rough week. "In the Penn community, it's very easy for those types of anxieties to be amplified," says Jessica Carrar, director of operations at the Philadelphia Collegiate Recovery Haven, or PCR Haven. Just a few blocks from Penn's campus, Carrar runs the residential sober living program with Gemma Lund-Mears to offer support for young adults in the Philadelphia area, including their fair share of Penn students who want to get sober. Lund-Mears, who's been sober since she was 18 years old, notes the cultural tendency to use any and every occasion as an opportunity to drink beyond what would be considered normal or healthy. "Drinking is what we do at weddings, at funerals, at sports games. At every darn thing, we pop open a beverage of some kind," she says. "And college parties are one of the best excuses to break out the booze." As the, quote, "sober brother," Jake often finds himself intervening at his frat's parties. According to university policy, social events held by student groups that serve alcohol are required to register ahead of time and have designated sober attendees that can serve as first responders if something goes wrong. Although other members of his frat rotate the responsibility, Jake's sobriety means that he often takes on a de facto caregiver role. "I honestly do feel responsible to make sure that no one does anything so beyond stupid that someone gets hurt," says Jake. Usually, there aren't many instances where he has to intervene, but there are always two or three other designated sober brothers at the party helping to de-escalate when things get out of hand. Occasionally, they'll cut someone off if they've become too messed up and encourage them to drink water. But that responsibility can also grow into a burden. It was honestly a lot of parenting, says Cheryl. When she used to go to parties as the sober friend, it was a constant worry of making sure everyone was okay and got home safe. My friends didn't bring me there to be the parent, says Cheryl, but that's obviously just kind of the role of the sober friend. And alcohol isn't the only substance at play. Harder drugs are also a fixture at Penn parties. As a result, the choice to be sober at Penn depends as much on financial considerations as it does on personal choice. Adrian lives in a house with members of the sailing team, so he's observed the feedback loop between money and illicit substances firsthand. Some students who come from wealthier backgrounds were already exposed to hard drugs in high school, and the more disposable income you have in college, the more you can spend on those same drugs. And yes, when we're talking about hard drugs at Penn, that usually means cocaine. Growing up, you're like, oh my god, that's so scandalous. And then you get there and it's like, coke pre-games. And I'm like, whoa, says Lauren. It's crazy how much money is going towards that kind of stuff. And that's because everything from replacement puff bars to Adderall for last-minute cramming to bar hopping on a Friday night is another expense for an already cash-strapped student. If you're someone who has to balance academics with work and other shit on your plate, you might not actually have time to go partying and drinking with friends and then recover from the hangover, says Cheryl, because that shit takes time. It's time, and for that matter money, that some students don't have to throw around. Not to mention, the sense of obligation to go out every weekend, pack your schedule, and spend your money eventually fades for sober students, just like it does for most people at Penn. Even Lauren, the girl with the five-night-a-week social calendar, found that frat parties were starting to lose their luster once she became an upperclassman. As you get older, everyone gets younger, she laments. Since she wasn't seeing her friends on the dance floor anymore, Lauren started going to smokes more often. It was the best way to run into people without having to make plans. As she distanced herself from nights spent in frat basements, Lauren started forming other habits in place of partying. Senior year, she went to Potruck every day, plus SoulCycle in Center City once a week. She spent more time with her friends in off-campus apartments. She started to value other things. At the same time, the interactions Lauren had grown accustomed to at frat parties, with their familiar drunken cadence, began to feel more and more superficial. She says, I was tired of people maybe not remembering me, or I didn't know if they remembered me, or I felt like I was building some sort of relationship with somebody and they didn't even know. It's not like Lauren has undergone a radical personality shift. She still loves to dance and talk to people. Being around that energy is the reason she joined SDT in the first place. It's just that, like drinking or doing drugs, party culture can be something that you grow out of, rather than something you do or don't. More and more, there's this normalization of being a sober young person. That it's not crazy, and that it doesn't mean you have to go hang out in church basements for the rest of your life and never have fun, says PCR Haven's Lund Mears. Many colleges and universities, including Penn, are starting to pick up on this sentiment, an increased demand for organized social spaces that aren't centered around drinking. In a statement to Street, Executive Director of Strategic Initiatives Mark Elias detailed an upcoming partnership between Wellness at Penn and University Life that'll focus on hosting, quote, substance-free late-night programming on campus this fall. This dovetails with the launch of the new SUPER, or Substance Use Prevention Education and Recovery Program, a wellness initiative focusing on students who are actively in recovery or trying to get sober. Carrar thinks this is a marked improvement over traditional zero-tolerance policies for alcohol in colleges. Quote, if a student is reaching out and saying, hey, I might have an issue, or I need help, that could mean they're risking their college career, she says. Sometimes that can be a real deterrent because there isn't a clear place to go that doesn't feel like it's going to be punitive. It remains to be seen whether the SUPER program and other new initiatives will offer a viable alternative to Penn's alcohol-centric party culture. Regardless, they represent a step toward a more sober, inclusive social scene for students who want it. That said, Jake is certainly proof that sober students can still thrive in a traditional party environment, choosing frat basement over church basement without sacrificing his sobriety. Still, he struggles to understand the reliance on alcohol that feels so prevalent amongst his peers. It's strange to me that people feel the need to drink in order to have fun, says Jake. He gets drunk on the party, the people, the energy of coming together at the end of the week in the collective catharsis of the dance floor. Jumping up and down, seeing my friends, seeing people I met all around campus in different spots. It's really fun, despite not having any substances in me, says Jake. And when the night's over, without the looming threat of a hangover, he'll be ready to do it all over again at the next party.
So, Walden, what inspired you to write this piece?
Yeah, totally. So I'm actually sober at Penn myself. And in the process of sort of conceptualizing of this feature, we thought of trying to answer this question of what does it mean to be sober and also be social at a school like Penn, where sort of, you know, drinking and partying are so tangled up with each other. And is it possible to disentangle those two? And what we actually discovered was that the breed of student who both is sober and goes out frequently is pretty rare. But regardless of that, we were able to track down a couple people who sort of struck that kind of unique balance, who were either in frats or sororities while still remaining sober, or just really liked going out on the weekends and dancing and having fun. But even the students we spoke to who had either grown out of partying or didn't really feel like it was for them, still had really useful insights to offer when it came to what it looks like being a sober student at Penn and sort of getting a perspective on that culture from people that we don't often hear about it from.
Was there anything you wish you could have included in the piece that had to get left out?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the more salacious details were left off the record, but I can promise you that there were some truly scandalous anecdotes in there. But we are glad that we got to include things like the mentions to the bright ass neon pink vomit, because that
one of my favorite pull quotes ever.
It really sets the scene.
Yeah, I mean, once you get that image in your head, it is really hard to get it out of there. But I would definitely say that, you know, when you're writing about a topic that is a little bit more sensitive for students, you know, there are always going to be details that you have to leave out to protect your sources. But I can guarantee you that anybody who's reading the feature is getting a good portion of the story, but there were some details that that will only remain privy to the writers.
All right, and this next segment is inspired by one of our favorite middle school games, Fuck, Marry, Kill. Because here at Street, we pride ourselves on being both chronically online and having a lot of opinions, we're going to play a game of Fuck, Marry, Kill with our favorite trends of pop culture at the moment. So I'm going to kick it off by giving one trend that I just want to see evaluated by the rest of Strigzak. Walden and Ariel are going to also give their trends. And then we're just going to have a little conversation and decide which of them we would fuck, which of them we would marry, and which of them we would kill.
Oh, I'm ready. Let's do
it. All right, let's go.
Keep rolling. Let's go.
So my trend is jutes. Now, if you've been anywhere on fashion TikTok or fashion Instagram, you have probably seen them. You've probably seen the heeled version, the flats version, the one that has like the little pocket on the side. There's a lot of different jute options. Also for context, jutes, jean boots.
Not like the fabric jute.
Yeah. I realized as I was saying it, but yeah, no, jutes, jean boots, as contrasted with the jort.
Mm-hmm. Or the jouch.
You
the
know, jouch. I'm quite familiar with the jort, as it were.
Oh, we know.
Too familiar, one might even say.
Now, to clarify, when we're talking about a jute, are we talking about a boot that is made out of denim or a boot that is made out of actual jeans?
Ooh. Excellent question.
Yeah.
Because I feel like from the examples I've seen, it's a lot more of the latter.
Yeah, it has to have like a decidedly jean-esque quality. Like if you just took like regular denim and cut an actual boot, I feel like that doesn't qualify.
There's like a slouchiness.
There's like a slouch. Yeah, yeah. A slouchiness.
That's exactly the word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm of the belief that the only appropriate outfit to pair a jute with is the Julia Fox jean-like top and pants. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. But okay, what about Brittany and Justin?
You know what?
A little Canadian tuxedo mm-hmm. moment.
Kind of a fair point. We may have to circle back to this.
Yeah,
for now.
Yeah, I think we need to hear the other two trends mm-hmm. before we get too deep into our jute discourse. Mm. So, Ariel, are you bringing to the table
today?
I'm
ready to share. So, my current favorite trend of the moment has to be the corn kid sound going around on TikTok.
For me, I really like corn.
What do you like about corn?
Ever since I was told that corn is real, it tasted good.
My family is obsessed with it. My roommates are obsessed with it. One of my roommates, her last name is Corn with a K. So I'm curious to know how Corn Kid would react if he knew that Jews had corn in their last names commonly. It's a really common thing. There's Kornfeld, you know, there's a lot of corn there.
Like the Try Guy.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of other TikToks being made to that sound, but
I love Corn Kid.
He's
for the
so
record.
Funny. It's Cone.
It's Cone.
I fear now that we have a podcast, does that make us no better than the Try Guys?
Listen.
Well.
We're not going to dwell on that.
Yeah, that's not
Let's
a thing to
move
unpack.
On. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's talk about my favorite pop culture trend of the week, which is the Harry Styles gay sex Twitter discourse. Now, to provide some context for anybody who doesn't know, Harry Styles was quoted as saying this about a new movie that he's starring in. Quote, "It's not like this is a gay story about these guys being gay. It's about love and about wasted time to me. So much of gay sex in film is two guys going at it, and it kind of removes the tenderness from it."
Oh, Harry.
So can we get some first take impressions on Harry Styles meets gay sex?
Bestie, this is not Harry Styles meeting gay sex for the first time.
Yeah.
Interesting. Elaborate on that.
The longtime One Direction fans will tell you about the little romance between Harry and Louis Tomlinson. That has never been confirmed, nor has it been denied.
Yeah, but don't you think that at this point, Harry Styles would not deny it simply to capitalize on being everybody's favorite ambiguously queer man?
Harry Styles is just a mystery. He truly doesn't tell us anything.
Is a title that I fear that he may have to give up after the way that Twitter has turned on him this week. To pull a selection of some of my favorite tweets, this one says, "Not Harry Styles pushing that woman into traffic and then shooting a baby." And in a true work of art, this reinterpretation of the Lana Del Rey infamous Question for the Culture notes app, which reads, "Question for the Culture, now that Timothy Chalamet, Jake Gyllenhaal, Colin Firth, Josh O'Connor and Armie Hammer have all had number ones with movies about being," a word that I'm not going to repeat on the air, "wearing no clothes, fucking, cheating, etc., can I please go back to acting about being embodied, feeling beautiful as a normal man by being in love with women, even if the relationship is not perfect, or singing for money, or whatever I want, without being crucified or saying that I'm queer baiting?"
I feel like out of a sense of journalistic obligation, I have to clarify that no, neither of those are real.
Yes, correct. Neither is real, but they speak to the temperature of the discourse at the time.
Which is very bad.
Also, not Harry Styles saying that he's never been in a public relationship with anyone. Like, fuck Olivia Wilde, right?
My dad actually said to me recently, my dad recently was like, "Ariel, did you know that Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde are dating?" I was like, "You're just finding this out?"
Okay, so I think we need to decide what we're going to do with these trends. Mm-hmm.
So I think we can all agree. We marry
Corn Kid. Yeah, we do.
So into marrying Corn Kid.
So many insights in that video.
Like, so much wisdom coming out of that child now.
Plus, if he loves corn that much, like, imagine how much he would love. It would be...
I think we should all find something that we love as much as that kid loves corn.
Yeah.
That kid really, he cracked the code of the universe.
And the way he said, like, corn should be only $1.
Okay, well,
like,
actually.
Socialist kid.
Exactly.
Well, that's a little expensive. I was at Trader Joe's and corn was 63
no,
cents
no,
an ear.
No, I think
ear.
He meant, like, a
corn. Oh, like, at the
corn.
Fair?
Yeah, because he was eating, like, fair corn, like, on a spoke.
True.
But you know whose impact it was that the corn at Trader Joe's was only 63 cents?
Corn Kid.
Or was Corn Kid driving up the price of corn?
Right.
Making
that
it
is
more
the question.
Corn inflation.
It's like he loves puns about corn. He hopes everyone has a corntastic day.
Exactly.
I know. And I think we should all take that to heart and make every day a corntastic day.
Aww.
How do we feel about the Jutes and Harry Styles matchup?
Now, I'm going to be honest.
Uh-huh.
I'm ready to let Jutes go. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to kill Jutes.
Mm-hmm. I was
really?
Gonna say
I'm gonna kill Jutes.
Yeah, and I just why would we fuck Jutes?
You wear the jutes once and then you never have to hear another bit of Harry Styles queer discourse.
But I feel like
I feel like that's a small price to pay.
I can handle another week of Harry Styles queer discourse because I love watching this man be taken down a few pegs.
But I just love watching Harry Styles talk.
You wear jutes. You wear jutes okay. One time. That's enough. Your jutes pilled now. Your jutes corn. That's all it takes. You wear one pair of jutes, it takes over your life. It takes over your identity.
Does it?
I don't know. Maybe we have to test that.
I feel like I need to buy a pair of jutes.
You can be the guinea pig.
It's fine.
I'll allow you to do that.
But I think that...
Not me, though.
Until the Harry Styles discourse has stopped producing any funny content, I'm not quite ready to let it go yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Harry Styles' Discord is like a positive externality.
There's such a well to draw from. And the fact that it has perfectly... like hit at the same time as the Don't Worry Darling drama is like, it's kind of like a perfect storm. And my Twitter feed is bringing me joy for the first time in like months.
I'm really sorry that your Twitter feed doesn't bring you joy.
Well, it's the Twitter feed and the SSRIs, to be fair. So I think we need to reach a final conclusion.
Okay.
Where we stand.
We can kill the Jutes. I'm not married to them.
Because we're married to corn.
Yeah, actually, I didn't even mean that as a pun. But it kind of works. I'm really literally not married to Jutes.
And we shan't be marrying Harry either. But we
not in this situation.
Even if Ariel wants
to. Not in this situation.
We shall be fucking.
We shall be. Well, we're not just fucking Harry. We're fucking the Harry gay Twitter discourse.
What I want to clarify is that this fucking of the Harry Styles gay Twitter discourse is not just going to be two guys going at it.
There's going to be a tenderness involved.
There's going to be a tenderness involved in this particular fucking of the Harry Styles gay sex Twitter discourse.
Mm-hmm.
And I just need, that's what I need all of our listeners to know.
A very important aside.
So it's time for our definitive ranking.
Yeah.
Of this month's pop culture trend.
It appears that we have decided to marry the TikTok audio of Corn Kid. We are fucking the Harry Styles gay sex discourse. And we're killing Jutes.
Bye bye, Jutes.
So sorry. Sad to see you go. Do we love to watch you leave? Not particularly.
No. We don't
love to watch Jutes do anything. And that's kind of the
thing. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in to the inaugural episode of The Streetcast. And please enjoy this recording of the dance remix of the Corn Kid song.
For me, I really like corn.
What do you like about corn?
It's corn! A big corn bit knob, it has the juice.
It has the juice.
I got him running a whole beautiful thing.
And we will see you next month.
That's just not it
at
all.
Not it.
It has the juice. It has the juice. I can't imagine a more beautiful thing.